Rede betrifft, die in Berlin den Anschlag auf die deutsch-arabische Gesellschaft verübt haben, ist die Polizei einen Schritt weiter gekommen, der nach dem Anschlag
everybody. Mike Malloy here on the Mike Malloy Radio Network. Welcome to the show tonight. Did you watch any of Barack Obama's Q&A, his press conference? I watched some of it. I didn't hear the opening part, but I heard some of the questions and some of the answers. Some of these junior members of the press corps, like Ed Henry and the rest of these folks, are starting to feel a little froggy, aren't they? Because they're jumping all over the place. It's kind of interesting to watch as the press corps tries to ask questions of substance, but it seems like all they can do, all these guys can do, is come up with, I don't know, questions that are kind of kind of smarmy. Well, you promised to do this. Well, you promised to do that. Well, why didn't you? The kind of whiny ass. You know what I'm saying? I'm still waiting for the substantive questions for this president, because more and more it's starting to appear that the substance of the Obama presidency is not looking too much different from what we've had for the past 16 years. I'll explain that a little bit more on the program tonight, but I don't know, man. This is starting to get a little bizarre. On the program tonight, we're going to try to work in a story corner. Also, Tim Geithner on the hot seat today in front of the House Financial Services Committee over the TARP funds and bailouts and AIG bonuses and so on and so forth. And once again, members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, we have a Democrat here, a member of Congress, who will be asking Geithner a question. We're only going to dump one of them into the program tonight, because most of it was crap. I swear to God, most of the questioning today was crap. And the one that we have for you is pretty much typical. I didn't hear anyone ask Secretary Geithner what his plans are, or what Barack Obama's plans are, or what the plans are for the financial community, I guess that's the right word, in this country. Now that China is getting ready, or China is starting to suggest we should have a new reserve currency, not the dollar. I don't know. Maybe some questions came up about that today, but I certainly didn't hear any. We'll get to that as the program develops. I got this earlier today, this email. I've been getting down pretty hard on Piyush Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, because I don't like him. He's a Republican. He's also a religious fanatic, and not a Hindu religious fanatic. Not that people of Indian extraction or descent are supposed to be Hindus, but he is a Christian religious fanatic. I'm always especially leery of converts, and I'm not saying Jindal wasn't brought up to be a Christian religious fanatic, but I don't think you have to go back in his family too very far at all to find an entirely different religion. It's one thing to assimilate. When my grandparents came here, they gave up their Catholicism and moved to Protestantism because Catholics at the time were still catching an awful lot of hell in this country. Now, the move from Catholicism to Protestantism is not the same by any means as the move from Hinduism to Christianity, but you understand what I'm saying. Immigrants will sometimes do that. Whew, God, that was a long sentence. So I don't like Piyush Jindal because he was pushed front and center by the Republicans in one more attempt to prove that they're not a lily-white party, which they are. The same as Michael Steele was pushed to the front of the Republican National Committee to prove that the Republican Party is not pure as the wind-driven snow, which it is and shall always be, mainly because Republican politicians just don't like people of color. That's all. They just don't. And I also don't like Piyush because of his kind of dumbass attitude when he was given a chance to respond after Barack Obama's State of the Union speech. He just dropped it completely and came across like a typical Republican. And I just don't like him. That's all. Oh, okay. So the other night, last night, we mentioned about exorcisms that this guy did one because he's a Christian. Piyush Jindal did, did an exorcism when he was in college. That's the conventional wisdom out there. And somebody wrote in, I think someone of Hindu nationality, Indian nationality, I should say, Hindu religion, who talked about exorcisms in the Hindu faith, that such a thing does occur. And I found it very interesting. And I got this email today. It says, Mike, I'm listening to your podcast from last night, and I just heard the comments you made about Piyush Jindal. I'm originally from India, just like Jindal, but I ask you and your listeners to please not associate our community with the likes of this guy. Most Indians in my generation are very progressive by nature. It is unfortunate that Governor Jindal has taken to, quote, selling religion, end quote, like some politicians do in India. However, most of us are not like him. Also, while the comment from one of your listeners about exorcism is fairly accurate, trust me when I say it is not done anymore. I am 30 years old, and I've seen this happen once in a remote village when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and that's about it. If anyone sees this kind of behavior on the streets of India, we would report it to the police now. And then he mentions about being a Nova M founding member. Thanks for what you do, Suman. Thanks, Suman. I appreciate your writing. However, I have been reading a lot about Vedic medicine, just out of curiosity. And also, recently, a television Discovery Channel or Science Channel or whatever, about this form of natural healing that has its roots deep in India or someplace else. I don't know. Don't correct me. Don't somebody send me an email and say, you got it wrong. It's not India. It's east of Sorten Mom. I don't care. The program I watched said it was India. And in the course of that program, they also talked about the religions in Australia, I guess you'd call it out back. Here you'd call it out west. In India, I don't know what you call it. In the villages, in the jungles, in the villages, there are still very much so the belief in exorcism and demons and devils and spirits and haints and so on and so forth. But anyway, Suman, thanks for writing. Thanks for writing. Also, was it last night we mentioned this move in Texas now by some freakish state congressman in Texas who named Berman, who wants to offer up master's degrees in science to schools that are essentially teaching creationism, creationist universities. And I got this email. Mike, I live fairly close to Texas Congressman Leo Berman's district. After listening to you last night, I wrote Congressman Berman concerning his ridiculous creationism is science bill. You should read his response. He truly is a moron. Steve. Now, here's what Steve wrote to Congressman Berman. I got to take a break here. Okay, we'll do it when we come back. It's very, very quick, but what Steve wrote to Berman and what Berman wrote back to Steve is, I don't know. I just find it all kind of funny. And I find it funny because, if, you know, like you, if I don't laugh, I'm going to start screaming and probably will never stop. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. All right, let me get back to this now. Steve, who writes, Mike, I live fairly close to Texas Congressman Leo Berman's district. After listening to last night, I wrote Congressman Berman concerning his ridiculous creationism is science bill. You should read his response. He truly is a moron. Now, what this was about, this guy in the Texas legislature has introduced a bill that would allow creation science style universities to offer master's degrees in science. This is what Steve wrote to the congressman. Creationism is not science. What it is superstitious hog snot. It makes as much sense as Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. I wish cretins like you would quit trying to force your childish mythology on thinking people. If there really was a God, I would say to you, God damn you to hell for trying to force your beliefs on me. Steve Lawson. And then the congressman writes back, it's amazing. Every one of you elitist atheists must have taken a master's degree in name-calling. Ooh, you are all good at it. How in the world can you damn me to hell? Are you telling me that you believe in heaven and hell? Or is this just one of the words you learned while getting your master's degree in nothing? You probably subscribe to the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on mankind, global warming. Jesus Christ. Why are Republicans so utterly stupid?
You know, I used to think that when George Bush left Texas, the village was missing its idiot. But apparently, no, this guy, he was there. He was ready to step right in.
Oh, this is just one.
Is it just Texas that breeds unusually moronic Republicans?
For some reason, more so. I mean, you know, the rest of the Confederate South, of course, has idiot Republicans and not a few idiot Democrats. But the worst of the worst, the real booger eaters are in Texas.
He makes Saxby Chambliss look like a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, our esteemed senior senator here in Georgia. Hey, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. That is kind of funny.
You must have taken a master's degree in nothing. Nanny boo boo.
Hey, really?
How do you take them?
Neener, neener, neener. What is with these people? Oh, my God. And the guy is in the Texas legislature. Well, sure. Well, of course he is. Neener, neener, neener. Completely missed the point of Steve's email, but that's all right. Doesn't matter. And RW, our good friend up in Chattanooga, writes regarding John King, because I had mentioned how King had done for Dick Cheney what Monica had done for Bill Clinton. Only King seems to be much better at it. And RW writes, Mike, you forget that John King got his start as a reporter for the 700 Club before Pat sold the channel to ABC. Never trusted the guy myself. I didn't know that. I didn't know John King started as a reporter for the 700 Club. Oh, no. Oh, no. But, all right. Sure. Whatever. And I believe RW knows this stuff. He's a very good source. So, John King, 700 Club, huh? Wow. I also said last night, have you got time for this? Yeah, I mentioned last night that Obama can't be that much of an insider in the Washington politics and in the kind of slime and the swamp you have to get into to govern this country now as it wends its way either into social democracy or fascism, one of the two. It's still a toss-up. But Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, writes regarding Obama being an insider. Obama spent 12 formative years teaching at the University of Chicago Law School from 1992 through 2004. The law school is considered part of the larger University of Chicago economics model, home of Milton Friedman. One can't be unaffected by marinating in the free market religious institution of the University of Chicago for that period of time. And since Obama has made his reputation on being a bargainer, a person who wishes to accommodate all sides, he's going to accommodate the banksters. I don't think economics is a strong part of his education. So when they tell him disaster awaits unless he accommodates them, he will listen. Obama simply is not a radical democratic socialist. As he once put it, hey, I'm a free market kind of guy. What Obama needs most is someone as knowledgeable as his other advisors who will explain to him what follow the money actually means. Taxpayers to AIG, to Goldman Sachs and others, to hedge funds, to offshore secret accounts, to the wealthiest 2 or 3 tenths of the population who then reinvest the profits in hedge funds. The bailouts are not meant to forestall disaster for the general economy, but rather to keep funneling public money to the wealthy. And Obama very much needs someone to explain that to him. Michael.
Talking to my neighbor, and he agrees with me. It's all gone crazy. Well, my wife returns from taking my little girl to school. She got beat to perspiration as she tries to keep her cool. She says that mess, it don't get no better. There's gonna come a day, someone's gonna get killed out there. And I turn to her and say,
to listen to Right Wing Radio, here's Mike Malone.
On what used to be solid ground, nobody was ever gonna get sized down. Legend I lead. When all those dollars make heavy sand, taking the food right out of the bay.
It's about 25 before the hour. I got this email regarding Barack Obama. I guess what I just said, this comes from Alice. Mike, please stop lambasting Obama. It just adds to the fuel for the right-wing machine fire. We've been listening and supporting your station and White Rose Society for many years. At least he's trying. Double plus good night. I'm sorry, Alice, if it upsets you, but I'm really starting, and I mean that, I'm not trying to be a smartass with you here, but Barack Obama is, if he has a master plan on how to deal with the crimes committed during the Bush years, and by that I mean simply to stop doing them, if he has a master plan where it concerns how to salvage an almost totally wrecked economy, I haven't seen anything yet except tons of money that goes to the very people who destroyed us to begin with. If he has a plan for health care, I'm not hearing it. And I, you know, I'm not playing this, always been in office for 60 days. Why hasn't he solved everything? What I am hearing is a young, attractive president who created an historical moment by getting elected, who is not saying things too differently from what his two immediate predecessors, Clinton and Bush, were saying. And like I said, I'll get to that in a second. In the current issue of Rolling Stone, there is a lengthy article that is recommended reading. Whoever sent this to me said it's a startling, lucid analysis of the financial crisis and the big players who caused it. You can get it online, rollingstone.com, and go to the politics section. Here are a couple of quotes. People are pissed off about this financial crisis and about this bailout, but they're not pissed off enough. The reality is that the worldwide economic meltdown and the bailout that followed were together a kind of revolution, a coup d'etat. They cemented and formalized a political trend that has been snowballing for decades, which is the gradual takeover of the government by a small class of connected insiders who used money to control elections, buy influence, and systematically weaken financial regulations. This crisis was the coup de grace. Given virtually free rein over the economy, these same insiders first wrecked the financial world, then cunningly granted themselves nearly unlimited emergency powers to clean up their own mess. And so the gambling addict leaders of companies like AIG end up not penniless and in jail, but with an alien-style death grip on the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. By creating an urgent crisis that can only be solved by those fluent in a language too complex for ordinary people to understand, the Wall Street crowd has turned the vast majority of Americans into non-participants in their own political future. There is a reason it used to be a crime in the Confederate States to teach a slave to read. The crime, literacy, is power. In the age of the CDS and the CDO, most of us are financial illiterates. By making an already too complex economy even more complex, Wall Street has used the crisis to effect an historic revolutionary change in our political system, transforming a democracy into a two-tiered state, one with plugged-in financial bureaucrats above and clueless customers below. Yeah. I'm not seeing the radical revolutionary approach that I had hoped would come with an Obama presidency. Not that he promised one. To the contrary, he did not promise one. But like a lot of people who perhaps saw something that wasn't there, I overlaid my own hope on his rather conservative, middle-of-the-road style of government. And middle-of-the-road now has come to mean right-wing. You understand that. The road, as it were, has been moved so far over to the right, right near the edge of the cliff there. If you look over the edge, look down there. Jesus, God, that's about 10,000 feet straight down. So the middle of the road is no longer the real middle. The middle of the road now has been moved extremely to the right. There is no left in this country. There's a few holdouts. Most of them huddled around various online publications and a few like The Nation in these times. Some of the revolutionary newspapers that are still out there hanging on by a thread, the weekly newspapers. So if you hear questions about Barack Obama, yeah, you betcha. Now, this would be a good place to insert Secretary Tim Geithner today testifying before House Financial Services Committee over the TARP funds, the bailouts, and the AIG bonuses. Some of the most, call them provocative questioning at today's, or questions at today's hearing came from Representative Brad Sherman, a Democrat of California, who wanted to know if Geithner was going to publish a list of the names of executives who took bonuses while taxpayers were bailing out AIG. You know, I don't give a damn. Do you? I don't care. I don't care. The only time I want to know their names is when the sons of bitches have been indicted. If they're not going to be indicted, if they're not going to be brought to up on some charges of something, and I don't even know what, what's the point in publishing names of these poor, miserable sons of bitches who are extremely wealthy? Most of them have returned the money, it's my understanding. They don't care. You know, a million here, 20 million there. It's chump change to them. This is a joke to them. I can imagine sitting around somebody's fifth or sixth estate somewhere, tossing back an excellent bourbon and branch water and laughing their asses off at these hearings, at the American public, at the so-called outrage. I mean, what the hell is going on here? Who do you care? I don't give a goddamn. $160 million went for bonuses, and the actual cost of what they've done to us is a staggering number that we'll never repay. I mean, you know, it's, what is it, 3 million, 6 million, 10, I mean, trillion, 3 trillion, 6 trillion, 10 trillion, 50 trillion, a quadrillion. I mean, who the hell knows? So to sit here essentially playing with ourselves over these names, or this list of names, this is stupid. It's quackery. It's dumbassery is what it is. Sherman said, Mr. Geithner, you've promised transparency, but what the American people want to know is about the compensation packages. See, right there. No, the American people don't want to know that. Mr. Brad Sherman. He goes on, will you publish a list of all the TARP recipients of the companies that got the money and how many of their executives, I don't want any person's name, just how many of the executives earned more than $1 million in 2008, how many of them got bonuses of over $500,000, and likewise for 2009, how many of them are earning salaries of over $1 million a year, and how many of them have what appears to be contractual rights to receive a bonus in excess of $250,000. I don't think it's just another AIG compensation. Wait a minute. That's on the tape. Oh, that's the soundbite. Okay, well, let's just go with Brad Sherman.
Mr. Geithner, you've promised transparency, but what the American people want to know is about the compensation packages. Will you publish a list of all the TARP recipients, the companies that got the money, and how many of their executives, I don't want any person's name, just how many of the executives earned more than $1 million in 2008, how many of them got bonuses of over $500,000, and likewise for 2009, how many of them are earning salaries of over $1 million a year, and how many of them have what appear to be contractual rights to receive a bonus in excess of $250,000. I don't think it's just about AIG compensation, and I don't think the American people should be blindsided and find out about bonuses on a Saturday that are about to be paid on a Sunday. Can you give us a chart for each TARP recipient?
Congressman, you're absolutely right. This goes well beyond AIG. And the president proposed on February 4th a range of reforms to broad compensation practice, including proposing that boards of directors
Mr. Secretary, it is my time, and I'll reclaim it. Are you going to give us the chart, or are you going to hide the ball?
I'm not going to hide the ball.
Are you going to give us the chart?
I will reflect on the suggestion you made and see if that is a reason.
In other words, you won't commit to telling the American people how many folks at Goldman Sachs or AIG are going to make $1 million this year.
Congressman, I will think carefully about your proposal.
Thank you for thinking. Let me move on. I'll move on to the next question.
Wow. Deep, man.
Don't you have some influence? Why aren't you Secretary of the Treasury? For God's sakes, man, you won the Nobel Prize. Timothy Geithner uses TurboTax. When I listen to you, things seem to make sense. Listen to him, all I hear is blah, blah, blah. Hey, Paul Krugman, where the hell are you, man? Obama breakdown.
Renegade Talk Radio done right, from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. excuse me, Mike in St. Paul writes, let's see, we're facing a crisis in the financial industry that at the end of the day, will cost trillions. We're facing worldwide environmental and social catastrophe in the next 50 years from overpopulation, possibly taking the world back into the dark ages or causing a nuclear war. But let's focus on a few million-dollar bonuses. This is what is wrong with our democracy, Mike. We have politicians looking for that 20-second soundbite on the evening news to tap into the public outrage. And meanwhile, no thought is being given to the substance of the problems we face. We are screwed, Mike in St. Paul. Yeah, I find that to be just infuriating when, and they all do it. What is it about members of the House or the Senate that they use the kind of language that they do in so many instances? And Geithner, I think Geithner is a classic, or not classic, but a perfect example of either. It can only be one of the two. Either Barack Obama's indifference to what we're facing, or his lack of knowledge about what we're facing in putting someone like Timothy Geithner in charge. I mean, everyone from our own prairie too, to Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize winning economist, are questioning what in the hell is Obama doing? He is not dealing with the problem, granted, that was given to him by two Bushes and a Clinton. Again, we were saying this, I was saying this before the election. Obama is going to find himself trying to deal with problems that are so enormous that they pretty much have failure written all over them. I'm just wondering who in our history could handle this. And not FDR. I mean, in the presidency, certainly not FDR. FDR did not have a situation like this. He had a meltdown in the U.S. financial system that went global, or a global meltdown that permeated the U.S. financial system. But it's because the crooks and the thieves, just as we have now, had free rein. But when the smoke cleared, there was still something to build on. And I don't see what there is to build on. I don't know. I'm as confused as everyone else at this point. I think as everyone else is. Maybe you all are just very clear eyed about this. But now here's another example. Barry. Senator Bernie Sanders is blocking a key Obama nomination. Ken Silverstein, writing at Harper's, writes, I reported back in February on the case of Gary Gensler, the former Goldman Sachs employee and derivatives cheerleader, who Barack Obama nominated to head the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC. Gensler's nomination sailed through the Senate Agricultural Committee, but Senator Bernie Sanders has placed a hold on the nomination, as has a second senator who is yet unnamed. Here's a statement from Bernie Sanders' office. It said, quote, while Mr. Gensler is clearly an intelligent and knowledgeable person, I cannot support his nomination. Mr. Gensler worked with Senator Phil Graham and Alan Greenspan to exempt credit card default swaps from regulation, which led to the collapse of AIG and has resulted in the largest taxpayer bailout in U.S. history. Mr. Gensler supported Graham Leach Bliley, which allowed banks like Citigroup to become so-called too big to fail. Mr. Gensler worked to deregulate the electronic energy trading, which led to the downfall of Enron and the spike in energy prices. At this moment in our history, we need an independent leader who will help create a new culture in the financial marketplace and move us away from the greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior which has caused so much harm to our economy. That's a statement from Bernie Sanders. So, in addition to Timothy Geithner and some of these other appointees that Barack Obama has thrust onto center stage, now we have this guy, Gary Gensler, who has the stench of this greed and this market manipulation all over him. So again, just like the email from the person who said, look, you know, what do you expect, Mike? Barack Obama comes out of the University of Chicago, which yes, was a hotbed of this kind of right-wing neoliberalism. And don't let the term neoliberal make you think there's anything liberal about it, because it's not. So how are we, people like me, I don't know what you think, but how are we to suppose that someone who comes from that environment, as an example, is, once he takes over as a senator or a committee chair or president of the United States, how is that person going to completely, you know, to do a 180 and say, okay, this can't go on? What Obama seems to be doing is saying it can go on, and if we throw enough money at it, it'll fix. And everybody with a lick of sense, I maybe it's just because they're people I agree with, maybe that's it. But again, I go back to Krugman. I don't mean to make it sound that there's five or six of them, but Krugman is the one that I read the most because he's in the popular press. But when someone like Krugman is saying, what the hell is going on here? Barack Obama has a chance. If he doesn't seize it, then it's going to seize him. And the result is going to be utter chaos. Welcome back. We're going to open the lines here if you'd like to comment on what we've done so far this first hour. The number is 877-99-MALLOY or 877-996-2556. Another example of what I think appears to a lot of people, both educated in the intricacies of this crisis, and those of us who are not educated in the intricacies of this crisis. Another example, though, of the confusion for someone like me is what's reported by the Wall Street Journal. And it says Barack Obama plans to meet Friday with about a dozen of the U.S.'s top banking chiefs in what the journal calls an unusual gathering designed to discuss the administration's plans to shore up the financial sector. To shore up the financial sector. Attendees are expected to include Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Citigroup. I mean, aren't these the people who have destroyed everything? Not that it didn't need to be destroyed, but I don't get this. The meeting comes, the Wall Street Journal reports, as relations between Washington and Wall Street are frayed, following last week's furor over bonuses paid to AIG executives. And the journal says at the same time, the administration is relying heavily on private investors and Wall Street banks to implement its various rescue programs and needs to repair the relationship. In other words, the Obama administration, if I've been following things correctly in mainstream media, the people who are once again sounding the warning, like Krugman, have a nice little column over here once or twice a week on the editorial page of the New York Times. Mainstream media is reporting this pretty much straight ahead with the way they should, without comment, but or without a critical comment. But when you see a sentence like that, the administration, the Obama administration, is relying heavily on private investors in Wall Street to implement the Obama administration's various rescue programs. In other words, Jesus, God, it's like, was it Willie Sutton when the FBI busted him, the famous bank robber, the infamous bank robber? They said, Willie, why do you keep robbing banks? And he looked at him and said, because that's where the money is. Jesus Christ, because that's where the money is. So what's going on here? If companies like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, if they are the ones who gleefully, willfully, not just participated in the scheme, but designed it. They're the ones that said, ha-ha, look what we're going to do. And then we're going to wire in AIG, and golly damn, we're going to have a field day. We are going to steal everything. We're going to steal these sons of bitches. This is going to be so much fun. We're going to steal them all blind. Everybody in this country, everybody in Europe, everybody in Asia, except the goddamn Chinese. How do we get the Chinese? I don't know. Well, we got to figure out. Well, we can't. They won't hold the money. Well, we're going to get everybody except the Chinese. Oh, I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. And especially this line in the Wall Street Journal. Several bank chief executives have openly criticized the White House's handling of the financial crisis, especially its public announcement of stress tests designed to measure the bank's financial health. That led to a sharp sell-off in financial stocks. So the executives are saying, wait a minute, Obama. Wait a minute. Stop. What are you doing? You're costing us money. We haven't stolen everything out of this dying capitalist system. There's still a faint heartbeat. There still might be half a pint of blood left in this body. And you son of a bitch, you're stopping us from getting us all. What's going on here? And the Obama administration seems to be saying, hey, guys, no offense. Wait a second. You can take as much as you want. As a matter of fact, we have a plan to set it up so that you can continue to pillage. Because you know what we're going to do? No, what? What are you going to do, Mr. President? We are going to put you in charge of how to fix the very things you destroyed. What? We're going to put you in charge of fixing what you destroyed. You're kidding. No. We get to... Wait a minute. Let me get together with my posse over here. Let me sit down with Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan and Citigroup and the rest of the boys over here. Hold on just a second. We'll be right back, Mr. President. Hold on just a minute. Mr. President, yeah, hell yeah. We'll come to the meeting. Yeah, you bet you. We'll be there. When is it? Friday? You got it, dude. We'll see ya. Adioski. It's not unprecedented for this to happen where you have a whole clutch of top bank executives meeting privately en masse with top government officials. But usually these kinds of meetings are handled by the Treasury or Federal Reserve. So what do you think is going on? According to the Wall Street Journal, last fall, then-Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson summoned many of the same top bank executives to Washington and pressured them to allow the government to inject capital into their companies. Pressured them. Here, take this money. How much you got, man? Half a trillion. That's it. Get out of here. Come on. Come back, Mr. Paulson, when you got real money. Wait. We're trying to save the banking industry. You're trying to do what? We're trying to save your industry. Hold on a minute. Mr. Paulson, okay, we'll take the money. We'll take it. Golly damn. Is that what's going on? Is this what's going on? So... Barack Obama, I mean, it's one thing to do rope-a-dope. It really is. It's one thing to invite all these limbots in for cocktails. It's something else, again, to invite scum like John Boehner in for dinner and expose your wife and children to the possibility of a slimy Republican having dinner in your house. A big one at that, too. Boehner there. Oh, he's the minority leader over there in the House, isn't he? But it's something else again, isn't it, to unless, you know, again, maybe Barack Obama is smarter than you and me by a factor of 20. And maybe Timothy Geithner is. And maybe Gensler is. And all these people that Barack Obama is appointing that seem to come out of the rat's nest of capitalism that created this. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to go crazy. I'm rapidly getting to the point on this program where it's almost like, Jesus, God, let's take on something easy like the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Let's let this American economy is dying issue let Tom Hartman do it. Okay, he can do this. Let Hartman do it. I can't get my mind around this at all. What is needed here, I think, and I said a couple of, several weeks back, that this seems as clear as radar to me, as simple as radar, I should say, that's what Curly said one time. All you have to do is take a look at the situation and say, that's it. Capitalism has reached a point, maybe globally, but certainly here, where it's a dead system. So what do you do with a corpse? You don't pump blood into it. You bury the goddamn thing and move on.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, again, whatever Barack Obama is doing, I hope it works. I really do. Timothy Geithner, more and more, is starting to look to me like somebody who has a huge target on his back. Since the corporatists in this society have gotten such a deathlock on government, it's probably foolish of me, and perhaps you, if you think about this stuff, it's foolish of those of us who think this way. It's foolish of me to even pretend to believe that Barack Obama is going to take a radical approach. You know, in solving this problem, the problem, if I read the numbers right, the problem is not one that is solvable. It cannot be solved. It just can't. And for the simple reason, there's not enough money to solve it. It is a money problem, and it takes money to solve it. There's not enough money to solve it. It seems to me, using that as the foundation, then I just apply, fourth grade logic. Maybe that's because I can't think beyond the fourth grade, or maybe it's because all this takes is fourth grade logic. But if the system is totally broken, if the damage is systemic, if it is to the point where it cannot be salvaged simply because we can't print money fast enough to fix it, then it would seem to me that the answer is to throw this system away after 400 years, get rid of it. It's over. And take a radical approach and restructure the economy of the United States and possibly the economy of the globe. I mean, I don't know. Do you? Does anybody know? Now, Now, I realize Barack Obama is not necessarily the great communicator. As a matter of fact, tonight, when he was answering questions, yes, he can answer questions. Yes, he is able to put together compound sentences. He's erudite. He's very intelligent. But I thought I was going to gouge my eyes out tonight with the stumbling like I'm doing right now. And maybe that's, I'm not saying it's because, I'm not saying anything negative about Obama. Jesus Christ, if you think I'm saying something negative about Obama, please go to the room, corner of the room, and sit in the corner and put the dunce cap on. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying the problem may be way too big to be fixed. And Barack Obama, having come out of a nest of economists who said, well, neoliberalism is the way to go. Don't worry about anything. The market will take care of itself. Forget John Maynard Keynes. None of that stuff works anymore. This is the new model. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. Well, guess what? It's not fine. And it's not working. And I worry that Obama, in his attempts to save a corpse, in trying to reanimate a corpse, is what it seems like to me, that he's losing the American public. He's losing us. Why not, you know, going back to, and I realize some people really advise against this, but why not let the goddamn thing just collapse? And if it's not, if we don't want to do that, if we don't want to let the entire American banking system to collapse because it's interwoven now with everything, that's how expert these spidery bastards were, then let's assume control of it all. Let's go ahead and declare this the Democratic Republic of the United States of America, and its system is now democratic socialism. And take these banks, seize the every one of these banks, nationalize them, fire every son of a bitch that's in there. Let them go choke to death on their money if they want, you know, whatever they want to do. And then put some people in charge who can move this system from predatory capitalism that does not work. Hello? If it worked, we wouldn't be here. People keep saying, well, Malloy, it's not the system, it's the people who ran it. That's not. It's the system. The people who ran it into the ground knew that. And that's the rub. You and I don't. They did. They do. The system's broken. So what are we going to do? I mean, here we have this charismatic young president who's going to be eaten alive by this, when it would seem to me that events dictate action here, not the other way around. Because the events have been building longer than Barack Obama has been alive. So what's he going to do? Continue to feed this corpse? Or kick it to the curb? Everybody's smoking, no one's getting high. Everybody's flying, I never touch the sky. There's UFOs over New York, and I ain't too surprised.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Quick email here from Merle in Michigan, then to your phone calls. Mike, I'm not a scholar by any sense of the word, just a laid-off Chrysler worker here in Michigan. However, looking at how our president tends to work, why not call a special meeting with the people who in fact caused this problem? It makes them feel special, privileged, etc., and as the discussion begins about what is needed to straighten out this horrific economic mess, you'd be surprised at how many disgruntled investment employees could end up telling on their previous and or current employers. Besides, the president is having a WhiteHouse.gov email chat session on Thursday, the day before this big meeting. People will divulge a lot when they can remain anonymous. Time will tell, but I've learned in this short time that President Obama is a forward thinker. You are about 5 steps ahead of me, and he is about 15 steps ahead of the Republicans, who tend to stay about 10 steps ahead of the average Democrat. He may be letting them know what their options are if they don't cooperate in assisting to get this mess straightened out. Merle from Michigan. Well, okay, maybe that's a version of rope-a-dope. I certainly hope that's the case, right? Who we got here? Steven is calling from Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Steven.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Brad Sherman, I heard him talking today on our local stations, KPFK and KPCC. I hope that doesn't get us in trouble. But he was saying what I said like a couple of weeks ago, that the American people are only looking at the $165 million of these bonuses and stuff for these clowns. And what it is, what Brad Sherman was saying, and I heard him say it, was this. If the American people really knew that it was just not the $165 million, but billions upon billions of hundreds of billions upon up to the trillions, that the American people are getting screwed. And he used that word. And I called his office in Washington, and his mailbox is full. And then I called his local office, and I talked to a real-life person. I said, thank you for saying what you said on the radio. And like I told Kathy, you know, I'm not here trying to defend a grandstanding politician. All I'm saying is that for once, not considering whose side he might really be on, he said something that I could understand. And also about Obama, Mike, you're talking about rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
And I have analogies that are exactly the same, only from a different perspective. And what it is I see like playing chess and pool hustling at the same time, mixed analogies. And here he is making all these sacrifices, getting all of us Americans pissed off about what he's doing. You know, he's sacrificing the bishop here. He's losing the pool game there. And when it comes down to the final game, when all the bucks are on the table, you know, he's just going to let it rip, you know, and just walk away with all the stuff. And I look at that as like another analogy. You've heard of the joke about the frog and the scorpion, right?
Right,
going across
right.
The river.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are you saying that Barack Obama is going to walk away with all the marbles?
No, not that. No, for us. What he's going to try and do, I think, is, first of all, socialism has always saved capitalism. It happened with FDR.
Right.
It happened in the Soviet Union, although that was different. And look at China now. I mean, if China ain't capitalist, you know, I see John the Baptist. But what's happening is I see him as like the frog being capitalism itself and the scorpion being the corporatist greed heads. And that frog's going to get halfway across the river, and that scorpion's going to sting that frog, and they're both down the tubes. And then Obama's going to say, well, we're going to have to come up with something new, and here's what we're going to call it. He's going to call it capitalism that plays fair. Because the people here can't understand words like socialism and democratic socialism or social democracy. They can't understand those words, but they can understand capitalism. And if we have the buzz phrase that says capitalism that plays fair, that's just another facade for maybe a decent standard of living for everybody.
All right.
around the world for a change.
All right. Let's, you know, Stephen, I certainly hope you're right. I hope that's what the game is here. But and thanks, Stephen. It just seems to me that let me phrase that. I question whether or not someone I question whether Barack Obama has the depth of experience and the kind of personality that in a struggle with the capitalists for the survival of the country, that Barack Obama will adopt a take-no-prisoners attitude. In other words, I wonder if he's got the maturity. Now, I'm not trying to get funny with the language there. I just wonder if he's got the maturity, and by that I mean the experience and the depth of knowledge. It's one thing to be an intellectual, and God knows Barack Obama is that, but it's something else again to be able to apply that intellectualism to real world solutions. And I think what is needed to be able to do that is experience. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen. Stephen, I hope that's what happens. Mike is calling from Chicago, listening via the internet. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a while. I hope all is well.
Yeah, it's going great. We miss your phone calls.
Yeah, I finally got a hold of you guys, so I've got you guys locked in now.
Great.
I wanted to bring up two points real quick that I think no one has brought up yet, and one of them is the disproportional ratio of people's pay to the cost of living. Now, Obama's talking about the middle class. Myself, I work in the hospitality industry, and I make a moderate salary. But over the years I've worked for this company, which is 4 years now, I've never received a raise. And every year it's always, oh, well, the economy, we can't afford it, and blah, blah, blah. And my hours have gone from 40 hours to 55 to 60 hours. And if you even think of asking for a raise, they'll just let you go and hire someone for cheaper. And I think that that's one of the biggest major problems, and it's never been brought up about when the cost of living goes up, it has to go, the people's income has to go up in proportion with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but that's not what has happened in this country in the past 25 years.
No, it hasn't. And I think that that's one of the problems that needs to be addressed. I think that, you know, underlying a lot of these bankruptcies and a lot of these foreclosures have to do with that, and I don't think everyone automatically assumes, oh, it's just people who are spending beyond their means, you know?
Well, there is an element of that. God knows we have lived a kind of, forgive the word, lifestyle in this country that is insane. While the rest of the world struggles to get one meal a day, you know, we're trying to figure out where to, what she restaurant to go to have our fourth meal of the day. So, yeah, we have skewed values in this country, I think that's just part of the problem.
And you know what? Like myself, I have one credit card, and it's a gas card because I was raised Irish Catholic, and I was, you know, you pay for what you have. Don't buy things you don't need with the money you don't have. And I'm not in credit card debt, and I'm thankful for that because I hear of all these horror stories, and I'm glad about that. I pay as I go, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's a good place to be no matter what, but especially now. Mike, thank you. I'm glad you found the number, and stay in touch, pal. All right? We'll listen for you again. Let me see here. Who sent this in? Someone named Mike. Keynesian macroeconomics and monetary economics are working just fine. The problem is multifaceted, and Obama's dealing with it just fine. His comments tonight were largely dealing with economics. He's a very quick study in economics. He did very well. Some money will be printed, some borrowed. If all was printed, it could lead to significant inflation. Otherwise, there's no problem with printing money per se. Remember earlier gold rushes, the economy boomed, and it was just yellow metal. Keynes suggested drop gold down a mine shaft, collapse the mine, then did it up. The above economic expansion will take up the slack in the country's underemployed resources. The real danger is if unfair benefits go to the wealthy. Mike, okay. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm getting about half of what you're saying there. It's probably me. It just didn't. I think what you were saying was that Obama knows exactly what he's doing, and there's no real reason to question. Okay. I can. I can hear that. I don't know if I agree with it, but all right, we'll take a break here and come back and take some phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lies.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, a couple of emails here very quickly. Bob in Murphy's, California writes, Mike, I love what you've been doing. Your righteous rage against the filthy, greedy right makes me feel good these past couple of years that I found you. But damn, I think you're not getting it with regard to how powerful these bastards are and what kind of strategic moves our brilliant president is going to have to pull to fool them into dropping their guard long enough to pull off the biggest Samson and Goliath move in the history of humanity. Give the man a chance, patience. If, after Obama uses the rats of capitalism to pull us out of this financial freefall and things level off, if then he doesn't turn his huge political capital toward progressive agendas, then I'll join you in outrage. But let's just be patient for a bit. Thanks for considering another point of view. Well, Bob, I've been saying that all along, at one point I declared a moratorium on any criticism of Obama because he was handed this massive problem. But I keep looking at the moves that he's making. You may be right. All of you who are suggesting that he needs some time. And God knows, I certainly agree. I'm not talking about that. I don't expect anything to change in 60 days, 100 days, a year, 2 years, 3 years. If he turns the corner on this by the time he's up for re-election, I think that will be a miracle equivalent to walking on water. But the appointments he's making to try to solve this problem, the conferences that he's holding with the people with whom he's holding the conferences, the ones that he's relying on to fix the problem are these piranhas who strip the flesh off of this country to begin with. I mean, what? Have they had a change of heart? Let's forget you and me. Let's forget Obama, the son of a bitches who have destroyed the economy. And again, I'm fully recognizing that it probably needed to be destroyed, but why turn to the very people who destroyed it to try to save it? Now, along those lines, I'm not sure what Dave and San Mateo is saying here, but here's what he wrote. Subject line, you suggest the impossible. Mike, the system's broken, yet the action you suggest is impossible. Look at the logic. If the system is dead and the only solution is to bury it, then nothing that Obama does will fix it. It will fail. Right? If Jesus himself came back and said we're burying capitalism and installing social democracy, that too will fail. He'd be crucified again. In both cases, the outcome is the same. Such efforts will fail. It has nothing to do with Barack Obama's experience or maturity. The conditions for the dramatic change you suggest do not exist. These conditions probably won't exist Until there's either a people's revolution or a dictatorship, I don't advocate either. All right, well, Dave, what the hell do you advocate? I mean, if this won't, the system's broken and it can't be fixed, and the action I'm suggesting is impossible, what did I suggest? Let it die. I mean, Dave, if you want to continue to watch as trillions are thrown into this furnace, and out the other end is not a working economy, but a bunch of smoke. Is that what you're saying? And you don't think there should be a people's revolution, and you don't think there should be a dictatorship, and you don't think this should happen, and you don't think that should happen. Oh, and by the way, next time you write to me, please don't write in 8-point caps. I mean, 8-point lettering, script. What the hell am I trying to say? Make it at least 10 points, will you? Just little teeny words here, hard to read. Well, I don't know. You guys are a lot smarter than I am. When we come back after the break, I have something interesting here from Prairie 2 regarding what we've been talking about tonight, and it segues right into China calling for new reserve currency. Yesterday, they proposed replacing the U.S. dollar as the international reserve currency with a new global system controlled by the International Monetary Fund. Well, maybe because they own the IMF now. They've got all the money. This was an essay posted on the People's Bank of China website. And the guy who wrote it, Zhou Xiaochuan, who is the central bank's governor, said the goal of this would be to create a reserve currency, quote, that is disconnected from individual nations, that would be us, and is able to remain stable in the long run, thus removing the inherent deficiencies caused by using credit-based national currencies, end quote. Yeah. Sure. Now, according to... this was in the Financial Times. Analysts said the proposal was an indication of Beijing's fears that actions being taken to save the domestic U.S. economy would have a negative impact on China. And Ku Hongbin, chief China economist for HSBC, I thought they were bankrupt too. Anyway, this guy says, quote, this is a clear sign that China, as the largest holder of U.S. financial, of U.S. dollar financial assets, China is concerned about the potential inflationary risk of the U.S. Federal Reserve printing money, end quote. Well, yeah. All right, more about this when we come back, and then Prairie 2's response to this. Stay with us. Yeah, Prairie 2 responds to the Governor General of the Central Bank of China. That's why he's our economics correspondent. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Just reading something here during the break that JB sent in, captured by the debt spider. The hell is this? This is pretty scary stuff. Whoa, all right. This will be midnight tonight in bed reading. Scary stuff indeed. All right, where were we? China calling for replacing the U.S. dollar as an international reserve currency with a new global system to be controlled by the IMF, International Monetary Fund. China is starting to get a little bit nervous, according to the experts or the analysts, that the actions being taken by Obama and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department to try to save the system here is going to result in horrendous inflation, which is going to cost the Chinese an awful lot of money, because they are holding hundreds of billions, I guess it's over a trillion, how much is it, of U.S. dollars. To replace the current system, Mr. Zhou suggested expanding the role of special drawing rights, which were introduced by the IMF in 1969, to support the Bretton Woods fixed exchange rate regime, but I don't get this either. All I know is China's central bank today or yesterday said, let's get rid of the U.S. dollar as the international reserve currency. All right, this is Prairie 2's take on that. Well, China, Prairie 2 writes, has come right out and said it. They want to end the U.S. dollar as a significant currency. Central Bank Governor Zhou Xiaochuan says China wants an international reserve currency based on fixed commodity prices. He cites John Maynard Keynes, who advised FDR on economics, as the model for this, and thinks it unfortunate that Keynes' advice was not followed in the 1940s. I think I like the way Mr. Zhou thinks, except for that slight tendency for fascism that his government displays. Mr. Zhou was so feared in his former job, which was cracking down on corporate corruption, that he was known as Zhou the Flayer. Flay. That's when your flesh comes off your bones. This means bad news for fat cat Republicans who have been maintaining the family fortune by shifting paper around. They may have to get real jobs actually doing something useful. Of course, Republicans would prefer to eliminate the American middle class and return to the plantation system. For the short term, China is in no position to force the change. If Obama fails in his efforts to save the U.S. economy, and he can only do this by embracing Keynesian economics, it will be China who steps up with this plan for a new world economy. A currency fixed to commodities appeals to any country that is holding a lot of dollars, dollars that have been steadily losing their value. An ounce of gold would buy a good man's suit 250 years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, and it will now. An ounce of gold. The world economy is too big to run on gold, but could be easily stabilized by tying it, the economy, to a basket of 30 commodities, as Keynes wanted to do. Imagine a world with no inflation, no AIG, no Republicans. I hope we don't have to learn to speak Chinese to achieve this. Pray too. And remember, you can go to his website, prairie2.com, prairie in the numeral 2.com. So if you have a comment on that take, go argue it with him. Okay. All right, back to your phone calls. Who do we have here? Nora. Nora is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Oh, hey, Mike.
Hi.
You suddenly took my call. Well, what I was calling to say is I get so much confidence when I listen to Geithner. I listened to Tim Geithner one night with PBS Jim Lehrer.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm like, this must be Barack Obama's secret ingredient to get filled with confidence. And tonight on Olbermann, it was briefly mentioned by Howard Feynman that there's been an aura somewhat of Peter Pan for the last 6 weeks that we can clap our hands and sprinkle fairy dust and we will get a new economy. And you know what? I really believe that I perceive Tim Geithner as a master wizard, and he's probably doing brain surgery on our economy while they're putting it into another body or something. And I'm just, I think he's a master wizard, and he's going to accomplish what Barack Obama needs.
All right, now what?
It looks, I think Paul, what's the guy?
Krugman?
Laureate winner or whatever he is.
Yeah.
Nobel winner.
Paul Krugman. Yeah.
I don't think he should be picking on Geithner. Maybe, I heard him on TV last night that he doesn't believe in magic. Well, maybe that's the problem.
All right, now wait a minute. Stop just a second, Nora. Let me make sure I'm hearing you right. You are willing to cast your fate with a magician Wait. You are willing to cast your fate with a magician, as you perceive that person to be a magician, Tim Geithner, who is going to sprinkle fairy dust on stuff and make it all happen, whereas real-world economists who win things like the Nobel Prize for Economics just are to be discounted? Is that what I'm hearing you?
Well, the way I perceive magic, it's sort of like religion. It's the system of bringing the powers of the universe into a focus to work for the result that you put your will upon.
Well, Nora, if I might be so obtuse to suggest that the powers of the universe, and I think we're talking about stuff happening 15 billion light years from now, that the power of the universe really doesn't too much give a damn about what's going on with our monetary or financial system.
Yeah, but they're coming through Congress. Some of the powers come through Congress to him, and he's drawing all these powers together in a focus.
Ah, well then, I guess that, okay.
I just perceive his fingers like 10 magic wands, and that he gives Barack Obama great confidence, and he gives me great confidence that he can do it.
Well, sometimes all one needs is confidence, but, you know, if I had confidence that I could leap across the Grand Canyon on a motorcycle, I don't think that would too much help me get across, do you think?
You know what I got from listening to all these economic wizards for
no.
the last 6 months, or brainiacs, or whatever they are that have been on all the shows?
An empty 401k portfolio. I'm sorry, what did you get?
Well, I forgot what I was going to say.
I'll bet you did. I'll bet you did forget. All right. Well, listen, Nora, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. I really do. You forgot what you were going to say. Yeah, that'll happen. You know, if you got to be careful with that stuff, because you can, you know, start a sentence and forget where you were going with it. I know. I've been there. Done that. Thanks, Nora. I appreciate what you had to say, whatever it was. I think wizardry is certainly a viable alternative right now, and fairy dust, I think, would far exceed the powers of I don't know. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Start with something simple, like 1 and 1 ain't 3. And 2 plus 2 will never get you 5. There's fractions and my subtraction, and X don't equal Y. But my homework is bound to multiply. Math sucks.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on Sirius. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Well, I just keep coming back to what we were talking about last week.
Yeah?
These are essentially bets that we're dealing with.
Right.
And when you're talking, and not so much the people who make bets, but the people who take bets know how to do it.
That's right.
I mean, bookies know how to lay odds.
Yeah, it's called the VIG, and they get it coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, we just don't really know what's happening. Nobody's telling us anymore. Like I said before, they could have, I mean, those tear-stained IOUs, no good, in their hands, holding them out front begging, and then have just as many good IOUs in their back pockets, waiting to get paid twice.
Uh-huh.
And I think what Barack Obama is trying to do is keep their philosophy, the monetarist philosophy, out there.
Yeah.
Keep those people there, ostensibly advising him, so that when things really crash, then you'll be able to turn with the whole country watching and say, hey, I believed you. I did what you said, and look what happened.
Yeah, but that doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't get Obama anywhere. It gets nobody anywhere except into madness, chaos, and the possibility of bad drugs flooding the country.
Well, I'm not saying he's a one-plan man.
Yeah.
I think he might be hoping this works. But
well,
when he has so little media behind him.
Yeah.
I mean, he can go out there himself and get the bully pulpit, as they say.
Right.
But just about, well, you know, 95% of what else is going on out there are people who are saying that it would have worked if you'd done it right.
Yeah, I know, Douglas. I gotta move on. I appreciate you calling. I don't know anymore. I don't. I realize I keep saying. Oh, by the way, Rox writes in. I hope Nora, our phone caller, I hope Nora knows the difference between fairy dust and angel dust. I made that mistake once. Rox writes. Now either you get that or you don't. But. Where was I? Oh, yeah. I realize that probably the most repeated phrase on this program now is, I don't know, and that's coming from your humble and obedient servant. And I think anyone who does claim to know exactly what's going on, with the exception of, for example, Paul Krugman knows what's going on. The head of the Chinese Central Bank knows what's going on. Our economics correspondent, Prairie 2, knows what's going on. But other than those three, plus maybe 10 more in the United States, I don't know that anyone knows really what's going on. I keep getting this feeling that hanging over my head is this, I don't know, a ledge of snow and ice, and like I'm standing on this little tiny rock outcropping halfway up a very large mountain, maybe a 20,000 feet tall mountain or high mountain. I'm at about the 10,000 foot level, and hanging over me is this huge ledge of snow and ice, and I'm standing there waiting for someone to rescue my confused self, because I don't know how I got on this ledge, but all of a sudden here I am, and I'm starting to hear things crack and crumble above me. And I look up and I see this huge mountain of ice and snow that seems like it's about to come crashing down. And you know, I'm not quite ready to panic, but when Kathy and I were talking today about or yesterday about putting in the garden this year, we're trying to decide whether or not to make it 3 or 4 or maybe 5 times bigger this time. And we decided that Molly's old enough that we can start teaching her certain things like how to pull the weeds. Oh, man. I don't know. All right. We'll come back to your phone calls. We have one open line here. 877-99-MALLOY. If you want to get it said tonight. Stay with us, okay? Don't leave me.
Heard them all, but love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cold. It's over, it ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the aisle, before the hour, before the aisle, before something, all right? Very, very confusing night for your humble and obedient servant here. Larry is calling from Clover, South Carolina, listening on XM. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Mike. Mike, you the man.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, I'm in a better mood today than I was the other day when I talked to you.
Good.
I would listen to you talk to somebody and you were talking about losing money in a 401k, right?
Right. Yes.
This year right here alone,
yeah.
And my wife's 401k, she yeah. lost $30,000. I lost $12,000.
Good Lord.
And then all of a sudden we put it in there and holler, the Democrats are doing it wrong.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, the 6 years, the Republicans messed us up, and man, I appreciate you. I listen to you every night, and I just can't, it just, I just want to tell you about that. I mean, because I heard you talking about it.
Well,
$42,000 in 8 hours we lost in a 401k total, mine and her 401k.
That's awful, Larry. I mean, it really is. A lot of people have lost an awful lot in 401ks, and just you come up with the instrument that we were all told to put our money here, it'll be okay. And it turned out not the case. Larry, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Sorry it had to be on such a topic. Rob is calling from Las Vegas, listening online. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Mike. You know, you mentioned a couple things about that. What is this all about? I am trying to say that this is a pyramid scheme about 100 or 1,000 times bigger than Madoff ever did.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yeah. But basically this is. And they say, oh, it's too big to fail. And I just want to say this because it's a little hard to hear you. These people kept selling it to themselves over and over and over and built this monstrous pyramid. People at the top have been taking it out for a few years. Now it's starting to collapse. But it's not $12 trillion. These people kept selling it to themselves over and over and over. If you actually let it collapse, all you'll have is the basic solid assets in the first place. The rest is all fake.
Well, but,
I see it.
Yeah, and you're probably right. But the fact is, the entire U.S. economy and probably a good chunk of the global economy is tied into that fake construct that you're talking about. So if it collapses, it's not just that we collapse back to real tangible assets. It is that we collapse completely. Everything goes down.
This one theory, let's just say that what started all of this were solid assets.
Right.
And this huge amount that might be lost is all fake. So if all the fake goes out of the system, what was lost?
Well, I wish it would work that way.
It might have to.
But if you and I start selling each other the same sweater back and forth, and every time I sell it to you for $10, you put a dollar in your pocket, then you sell it back to me for $10, and I put it in my pocket, and I sell it back to you for $10, and you take, I mean, eventually, not only does that collapse, we may come back to the same sweater that we started selling each other, but all that phony, funny money that every time I sold to you, you took a buck, every time you sold to me, I took a buck, and we use that to, start an investment fund. And if everything collapses back to the sweater, then everything collapses back to the sweater. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Wait a minute.
I say everything in between was fake anyway.
Yeah, it was. I think you're right, Bob. I wish I could make sense out of anything that I'm saying. You folks are all making sense tonight. I'm not. Thanks, Bob. Hold on just a second. Tom Hartman! Where's Hartman? He would understand this. He understands this.
I would imagine he's sleeping.
He's probably asleep. Don't anybody call him. Nan here is calling from Chesterfield, Missouri, listening on XM.
Yes.
Hi, Nan.
Hi, Mike. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I make sure that I listen to you every night.
Bless your heart.
I just had the strangest, I don't know, feeling tonight. I just finished reading a book called How Stupid Are We? And I feel like I'm beating my head against the wall with all the people I work with, trying to get them to wake up and not listen to television. And because I don't own a TV, but I also listen. Everything's changed on XM radio, and none of the programs are the same. And so yesterday I was listening, and there was a program that was definitely oriented for Black America. And there was a man and there was a woman on there, and she was talking about all of the inequalities that exist today in Black America, which after I listened to that program, I thought, I am so incredibly ignorant. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And then I've just been thinking that Barack Obama is just a brilliant man, and I can't imagine that he would want to go down in history as the man who was the leader of taking down, you know, America.
Mm-hmm.
And then tonight I thought, you know what? He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think that maybe finally, after 200 years, white America is going to get to truly experience the Black experience.
Oh, well, what is that, the Black experience?
Well, I think we're going to get to be the people that are enslaved and get to truly feel probably what they've felt for the last several hundred years living in this country.
So you're saying that Barack Obama is going to preside over the collapse of the system?
Yeah, don't you think?
Well, I think there's a very good possibility, but I don't think that he is going, first of all, I don't think he wants that to happen. I don't think you feel that way either. He doesn't want that to happen. I don't think Barack Obama wants to have an historical footnote attached to his historical presidency that says, oh, by the way, this is the guy that was in office when everything collapsed. Because
I don't either. I don't think he would want that either, but maybe that's not at all the agenda.
What would the agenda be?
Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not at all, not at all racist. I don't mean that at all.
No, I get you.
Maybe he's the man that is going to vindicate for all of the abuses that the black man has put up with living in this country for the last 200 years. And I wouldn't blame him.
You're saying he might be
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It is very bizarre, but it just seems that all of the people that he has surrounding him, I mean, are just weasels.
All of them? Hey, Nan.
Are you there?
Yeah, I said all of them. Nan? Nan can't hear me? What's going on here? Can you hear me now, Nan? I guess Nan can't hear me. Let me put you on hold until we figure out what the problem is here. Let me see if we can get Linda on. Linda, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Okay, so you can hear me.
I can hear you, but you faded out. It's very, very, very low. I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you.
Really?
Yeah, it was a very nice level. Now it's very, very low.
Huh, it's still very low.
Now it's better.
Now it's better.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Linda, go ahead.
Well, I'm just calling to tell you how much I enjoy your program and appreciate it. And even though you keep saying, oh, I don't know about all this economic stuff, you really helped me.
Well,
back of it.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that, and I thank you for saying that. But I'm absolutely lost. If anybody gets anything out of this show, Linda, it's because you might be a little bit more lost than me.
Oh no, I don't feel lost.
You don't.
But you do. I really enjoy your show. I listen to you. I make a point of going to bed with your show every night, and it's refreshing.
It doesn't give you bad dreams, huh?
No, it does not.
Oh, okay.
It keeps me focused on what is, and I love your take on everything you do. I love your show.
Well, that's very kind, and I do appreciate it. Thank you, Linda. Thanks a lot. I don't know what the problem was with Nan's call, but gremlins. I don't know. Just gremlins. We'll work it out. Just stay there. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming, for the loser now will be later to win. For the times they are a-changin'.
For the hour, thanks to thanks to our crew of desperados, and that crew is Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and yours truly. Couple of quick emails here. Sarah in Brevard, North Carolina writes, Mike, whenever I find myself in a rotten situation, I always stop and ask myself, what's happening right now at this very moment that I can't handle? I check it out. I'm breathing. No one's dropping bombs on my head. And with only about four serious exceptions in a long life, there has never been anything happening right now, except in my head, that I can't handle. And actually, I handled those four things, too. All the best, Sarah Brevard. Okay. That's true. But you live up in the western North Carolina mountains where, you know, you have clean water and probably a place to grow some vegetables. Dave writes, Dear Mike, sorry to be obtuse. There is no viable political position that would allow Obama to declare capitalism dead and proceed from that assumption. He would be run out of town. If he fails, and you seem to believe that he will, then maybe life will then get hard enough that Americans will demand social democracy. But we're not there yet. Dave. I'm not ready to say, Dave, that I think he's going to fail. Although I guess it does sound like that. It sounds like I'm saying that. What I'm afraid of is that the situation, you know, it's one thing to fail. It's something else again to be defeated, isn't it? I mean, are they two the same? I guess the end result is the same. The failure to me carries with it the connotation that the person didn't try hard enough, you know. Well, I failed at math. Why did you fail at math? Because you didn't try hard enough, right? But to be defeated is different, isn't it? Or are we talking qualitative difference instead of quantitative? I don't know, but I'm not ready to say that Barack will fail, but I'm getting to the point where I feel like saying he's going to be defeated. And the only reason I say that is because I'm being influenced by people who are more well versed in this system or this topic of economics than I. I'm trying to read everything I can get my hands on. I'm trying to listen to people who understand this topic. And I'm trying also to take a good hard look at what has happened in this country since 1980. Since the election of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was the culmination of efforts by right-wingers that started to coalesce when Barry Goldwater was so soundly defeated in 1964. And it only took him 16 years. And once they got Reagan in, it was just like, okay, here we go. And so here we are. You know, the whole supply side, trickle down, neoliberal economic policies, invade countries, force them to accept democracy as we've defined it, force them to work under a capitalist system, whether they want to or not, make them provide the labor necessary for the American capitalist machine, yada yada yada. And it just seems to me we've kind of reached the end of that. So, you know, that's Barack Obama being defeated, not failing, unless there's no difference in the two words. I think there is. You know, words have meanings, right? Language is loaded with nuance. I think there is a difference between failing and being defeated. I really do. Where are we here? Jack is in Olympia, Washington, listening on online and KPTK. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you. I can barely hear you. Can you hear me okay?
I'm sorry about that. I don't know what's going on. You tell me if you can hear me better now. Can you hear me?
You're loud and clear, but I don't want to take a lot of time.
Okay.
I just wanted to – you mentioned the trickle-down thing with Ronald Reagan. Yeah, it's time for the demand side. Let's trickle up.
Uh-huh.
And I like Nation Magazine, and one of the they were talking about the other day, I was reading about, was let's, you know, we've been so far moved. You talked about this earlier tonight. We on the left think we're left. No, we're moderate. And those that think they're moderate, no, they're right. So you're absolutely right. So one of the things we ought to do is we ought to double the Social Security payments to people in this country. That guy that called earlier who's crying almost because he's losing his 401k, we, you know, we used to have a great pension plan in this country, but the damn Republicans, they got rid of it. We got this 401k crap. You know what? Let's do like Western Europe. Let's go back and let's put in a doubling of the Social Security payment so people can actually live on it. I'm talking about people that have worked their entire life. I'm not looking for anybody. You know, the Republicans always worry about freeloaders. Okay, no freeloaders. But people that have worked, that would be a great way to get some money back in the system. It would be a heck of a lot cheaper than give it to AIG.
Well, you get no argument from me on that one, Jack. I absolutely, positively agree. Thanks, pal. I'm glad you checked in. And if you're on hold, we're not going to get to you tonight. I do apologize. But we are flat out of time. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? What was wrong with the volume tonight? Do you have any idea?
What?
I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit.
Speak up.
Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.